Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 22, Text 53. Nityato gayata pasyan yaita vanu karoti tan evam buddhi gunan pasyan anino pya no kartaye. Nityo yato gayatam pasyan yate vanu karoti tan evam buddhi gunam pasyan anino panu kayate. Niyata.
Persons
who are dancing gayata and singing. Pasyan, observing. Yata, just as. Eva, indeed. Anukaroti, imitates. Tan, them. Evam, thus. Buddhi, of the material intelligence. Gunam, the acquired qualities. Pashyam, seeing. Aniha, although not himself engaged in activity. Api, nevertheless. Anukaryate, is made to imitate. Translation: as one may imitate persons who one sees dancing and singing, similarly the soul, although never the doer of material activities, becomes captivated by material intelligence and is thus forced to imitate its qualities. Translation responsibly: just as one may imitate persons who are seeing, whom one sees dancing, and singing. Similarly, the soul, although never the doer of material activities, becomes captivated by material intelligence and is thus forced to imitate its qualities. Purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Sometimes people are captivated by professional singers and dancers and imitate within their minds the musical rhythms and melodies of performers along with their romantic, humorous or heroic emotions. People sing songs heard on the radio and imitate dances and dramatic performances seen on television or in movies and theatres, entering into the emotions and art of the performer. The conditioned soul is similarly captivated by the concoctions of the material mind and the intelligence, which convince him that he can become the enjoyer of the material world. Although different from the material body and never the actual performer of its activities, the conditioned soul is induced to engage his body in material activities, which entangle him in the cycle of birth and death. One should not accept the illicit propositions of material intelligence, but rather engage himself fully in the service of the Lord and Krishna consciousness. Om Agyana Timiranda Syaganam Janasha Lakaya Chakshura Militam Menata Smai Shri Guru Venamaha Nama Om Vishnu Badaya Krishna Pastaya Bhutale Shimati Ridai Nanda Goswaminiti Namine Nama Om Vishnu Badaya Krishna Pastaya Bhutale Shimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devam Gaudavani Pacharine Nevisesha Shunivadi Pashachate Shatarine Shri Krishna Chaitana Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So isn't it something with devotees? You know, they come to Krishna consciousness and every now and again, even after many, many years, all of a sudden this song pops into your mind that you thought you'd never ever remember, you know, some pop song or something. And you wonder, where the hell did that come from? You know? It's just that it's such an intoxicating thing to become wrapped up with what great personalities or so-called great personalities in the material world are doing. The previous verse was interesting, where it was pointing out how one is made to wonder because of his fruitive work. So, you know, one is searching all the time in this material world, how can I experience happiness?
But we're all...
Sorry? That's what I thought. But I just saw there it was 53. So obviously they've missed it. But in that previous, if they did, the 52 was made to wonder, this is the translation, made to wonder because of his fruitive works, the conditioned soul by contact with the mode of goodness takes birth amongst the sages or demigods. By contact with the mode of passion he becomes a demon or a human being. And by association with the mode of ignorance he takes his birth as a ghost or an animal kingdom. So the purport here was the word triyaktvam means the status of an animal, which includes all lower forms of life such as beasts, birds, insects, fish and planets and plants. I thought you missed it. I thought he put it down. So the living conditioned soul is made to wander because of his fruitive works. The conditioned soul experiences hellish situations in this material world. Even in the mode of goodness, we say in the mode of goodness, you know, that is the highest state to be in. That's the springboard to go into spiritual consciousness, Sudhasattva. Even in that, you know, it says here you take birth amongst the sages and the devotees, but even that is temporary. You know how sometimes we have a situation where, you know, your guru arrives, your guru is in town and everything is uplifting, and you sit in a class with your spiritual master and you just don't want to be anywhere else. Time just stands still and you're just transfixed on every word that your spiritual master is speaking, and you just think to yourself, I could stay here forever, you know, and you want to, but the material nature is that we have to get up and move, and eventually the program or the lecture ends and your spiritual master leaves or the great devotee leaves. Or similarly, you know, sometimes you can be in an ecstatic kirtan, you know, really, really ecstatic kirtan. You're feeling real ecstasy, like on a Harinam, you know, that all of a sudden you've engaged people and they're responding, they're dancing with you, and whoever is leading the kirtan has got just the right note, just the right tune, and you think to yourself, oh, I could go on with this forever. Don't want it to cease. You don't want it to stop. But unfortunately, this is the material world, and it does stop. So even in this mode of goodness, even when you get birth with the sages or the devotees, if it's not in the spiritual realm with Krishna, it's temporary. So there's anxiety there too. Oh God, it's ending. I don't want it to end. So in passion, you have the situation where the bewildered soul is trying to find the right direction in life. You know, he's completely captivated by sense enjoyment. And he has this go-for-it attitude, you know, this very self-centered attitude, oh, everything is for me. But even that is not satisfying. It's not satisfying. Some people, for a temporary period of time, find satisfaction in building a big business or becoming really an industrialist or very successful in various things. But ultimately, there's no satisfaction. Just recently, there was an interesting news item where great people, great passionate entrepreneurs and business people like Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, and they have what's called a billionaires club. And basically they have everything that you could ever possibly think of in a material sense. They have everything. You know, I mean, there's just no limit to what, if they want something, if they want to buy a country, they could buy a country. Basically, their whole bank account is more than the treasury holds in small countries. It's just mind-boggling. And just recently there was a news item which actually said that these men were dissatisfied with life, and that they felt greater joy and greater fulfillment by giving to other people. So they virtually made a pact between them all. This is the richest men in the world. And made a pact that they would give most of their wealth away to charities. And Warren Buffett and Bill Gates are encouraging all these other billionaires to give away their money. It's an amazing thing. So there's no satisfaction there. There's only so many new cars that you can have. You know, sometimes you see the lives of these great wealthy people and they have a garage and they've got 20 cars in there. Well, whoever gets a chance to drive 20 cars, you know, or houses or mistresses or toy boys. I mean, there's only so much you can have. And this is the passionate people. In ignorance, a person is so covered, and we come across these all the time, people that are in the mode of ignorance. You know, they're virtually, as is pointed out here, they're basically in the status of an animal. They just eat and sleep and, you know, go on and, you know, they just trog from one day to the next, very much stupefied, very much intoxicated. And if they're not ghostly haunted by their intoxication and dirty lifestyle, in the next lifetime, it's pointed out in that purport that actually eventually they will end up in a ghostly realm or in an animal birth. And it's said that in the Shastras that actually to take an animal birth is the greatest fear, to again lose that independence, to lose that free will, to lose that intelligence is the greatest fear. We talk about hell. You know, people, and in the fifth canto, we're explaining different hellish planets, but the real hell is to actually come back as an animal, to lose this great gift that you have in the human form of life, free will and intelligence, to actually go beyond this material encapsulating situation. So, this was an interesting thing when I gave a lecture at the Carmelite Center the other week. They wanted, everybody knows the Carmelite Center is the Catholic organization just down the road in Middle Park where that big church is, the Catholic Church. Anyway, the people there asked us to give a talk on Krishna consciousness to their congregation. And so for 2 hours I was booked in to give a class on Krishna consciousness, and they wanted to know every facet of Krishna consciousness. The stumbling block, the real stumbling block, was again this point of karma. Karma seems to be a thing that they just can't get their head around. The questions that kept on coming was, well, why does a small child, you know, we were talking recently in classes about reincarnation, why would a small child be inflicted with pain and another child not? Why is one rich and one's poor? And no matter how I tried, they just couldn't grasp it, you know. It was really interesting. They just couldn't fathom it. And I said, well, it's the law of karma that's in action, you know. In the Bible it's also stated, you know, so you sow, so shall you reap. So for whatever action, there's a reaction. And so, you know, to go along with that, there has to be further birth and death. You know, another birth and another life to fulfill the deeds that have been done. Yeah, but that doesn't seem fair. And I said, well, does it seem fair that, you know, a child is born with a disability and one child is not? Where's the fairness in that? Well, that's just random chance. I said, you've got to be kidding. He said, no, that's just random chance. That's just bad luck. I said, there's no such thing as luck. How can there be such a thing as luck? Everything is scientifically worked out. Therefore, every action in science, there's no such thing as luck. If you do a certain thing, there's a reaction. So then they turned around and one guy said, yeah, but the Dalai Lama, who believes in karma, he also says that, you know, some things are just bad luck. And I said, well, then the Dalai Lama doesn't know what karma is, because that's not karma. And they said, oh, really? I said, well, you know, maybe he does know what karma is, but he's trying to soften up his audience and trying to win them over and saying, well, you know, actually, it's not your bad deeds that caused you to have an illness. It's not your bad deeds that you're poor, or it's not your good deeds that you're rich. It's just a mistake. It's just, you know, some blip in the creation, some awful thing that happened. Anyway, they just couldn't understand it. It was quite interesting. But, you know, in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, in that shloka, it's Raja Vidya Raja Guru and Kavitram Nidam Uttamam. It's the king of knowledge, and it's the most secret of all secrets as well, you know. So somehow, because people are steeped in ignorance, even though it's explained to them and it's clearly, you know, available for them to understand, they still can't understand. It's like a block there. Just on that, in the purport, Prabhupada says something quite interesting that I'd like to read in that shloka. It's a long purport. Have you ever seen that one, that Rajabija Rajagunam? It's a really long purport, but there's one section. A person who has completely ended the reactions of all sinful activities and who is fully engaged in pious activities, being freed from the duality of material world, becomes engaged in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. It's exactly what the next purport says. In other words, those who are actually engaged in devotional service of the Lord are already free from all reactions. For those who are engaged in devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all sinful reactions, whether fructified, in stock, or in the forms of a seed, gradually vanish. Therefore, the purifying potency of devotional service is very strong, and it is called Pavitram Uttamam, the purest. Uttamam means transcendental. Tamas means this material world or darkness. And Uttamam means that which is transcendental to the material activities. So we can actually stop our karma. We can actually change the reactions to our karma. And that leads us then to this verse, which is the verse for today. And there we see that, you know, the... just as one may imitate persons who sees dancing and singing, similarly the soul, although never the doer of material activities, becomes captivated by material intelligence and is thus forced to imitate its qualities. So, you know, there's nothing so cute as a little kid imitating a pop personality or something. It's always like that, you know. You see this little kid and he does an Elvis Presley impersonation or something. Oh, isn't he cute? That's unfortunately how we are. So the material mind and the talents is convince the living entity that actually, you know, this body is the enjoyer of this material world. You should actually go out there and this is all for you. And the duped living entity thinks, yes, it's all for me. It's all my enjoyment. I can enjoy it. But unfortunately, it's all temporary. Even if they get a little bit of pleasure here and there, it's all temporary. It's all just a relief. Because the living entity by nature is Satchitananda Vigraha, is by nature full of knowledge, eternality and bliss. So the conditioned soul, as is pointed out in this purport, is induced, forced by the laws of nature, to engage in material activities. So we're forced, we're pushed into it. You know, which is an amazing thing. And we're constantly entangled in the cycle of birth and death. And as is pointed out, one should not accept the illicit propositions of material intelligence, but rather one should engage himself, oneself, fully in the service of the Lord in Krishna consciousness. So that's the ticket. We have to, we can't accept this illicit proposition that the mind is making to us, that we can enjoy. Because in actual fact, it is just a night and day dream. It is all a phantasmagoria. It is illusory. So, wake-up state is a meaningful relationship with God. That's the wake-up call. Develop a relationship with God. Develop a relationship with Krishna. That's the wake-up call. And we should use all our endeavours and see ourselves free by this devotional process, as was pointed out in that purport that I read. The best way to maintain our Krishna consciousness is vigilance by good devotee association, and that's what I wanted to talk about today. The need for us to develop good devotee association. Association is so incredibly important. Association actually can protect us from this material onslaught. When the mind, the material mind and the material intelligence are pushing us to act in a certain way, it is this association with like-minded souls that actually can steer us in the clear direction. Prabhupada gives that analogy of one stick by itself can be easily broken. Put many sticks together and it's hard to break. There's another analogy also, and this is actually from nature. When you have a herd, if you're a shepherd, if you have a herd of sheep, if you keep the sheep contained, they won't be attacked by wolves or prey, because the wolf will not attack a herd of sheep. It will only attack a sheep that has wandered off in isolation. Then it becomes the victim of the wolf's attack. So there's a need for developing meaningful relationships with the Lord and his devotees. This is absolutely essential. Some of us have a fear of developing relationships. And, you know, due to past karma, past actions that we've done, we have a fear of developing deep, meaningful relationship, intimate relationship. And if you don't develop a close relationship or close friends, you are going to tend to be more and more fearful. So within devotional service, it is incumbent upon us to actually develop a community of friendship, a community of sincere friendship. There's one other section that I was, when I was researching this in chapter 9 of Bhagavad Gita, same chapter, where in that chapter, Samaham Savabhuteshu Name Dvijasthina Priya, Krishna says, I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I'm equal to all. But he who renders service unto me in devotion is a friend in me, and I'm also a friend in him. So I just wanted to read this purport as well, if you don't mind. One may question here, if Krishna is equal to everyone and no one is his special friend, then why does he take special interest in the devotees who are always engaged in his transcendental service? But this is not discrimination. It's natural. Any man in this material world may be very charitably disposed, yet he has a special interest in his own children. The Lord claims that every living entity, in whatever form, is his son and daughter, and as such, he provides everyone with a generous supply of the necessities of life. He's like a cloud which pours rain over all, regardless whether it falls on rock, land, or water. But for his devotees, he gives specific attention. Such devotees are mentioned here. They are always in Krishna consciousness, and therefore they are always transcendentally situated in Krishna. They are the very phrase Krishna consciousness suggests that those who are in such consciousness are living transcendentalists situated in him. The Lord says here distinctly, mayite, in me. Naturally, as a result, the Lord is also in them. This is reciprocal. This also explains the word astina priya, yebhajanti. Whoever surrenders unto me, proportionately, I take care of him. The transcendental reciprocation exists because both the Lord and the devotee are conscious. When a diamond is set in a golden ring, it looks very nice. The gold is glorified, and at the same time, the diamond is glorified. The Lord and the living entity eternally glitter. And when the living entity becomes inclined to the service of the Lord, he looks like gold. The Lord is a diamond, and so this combination is very nice. Living entities in a pure state are called devotees. The Supreme Lord becomes the devotee of his devotees. If a reciprocal relationship is not present between the devotee and the Lord, then there is no personalist philosophy. So it's all based on this relationship factor. This is where Imayavadi comes in. In the impersonal philosophy, there is no reciprocation between the Supreme and the living entity. But in the personalist philosophy, there is. The example is often given that the Lord is like a desire tree, and whatever one wants from the desire tree, the Lord supplies. But here the example is more complete. The Lord is here stated to be partial to the devotees. This is the manifestation of the Lord's special mercy to the devotee. The Lord's reciprocation should not be considered to be under the laws of karma. So it's not something, it belongs to the transcendental situation in which the Lord and his devotion and his devotees function. Devotional service to the Lord is not an activity of this material world, it is part of the spiritual world where eternality, bliss and knowledge predominates. Srila Prabhupada ki jaya. So the scriptures tell us to share things. The scriptures tell us that this development of this relationship with one another is a very important thing. That we should share things. We should share things of our mind what's on our mind at the moment. You know, we should give gifts to one another. We should converse about Krishna and talk to one another about Krishna. And as devotees, we shouldn't fear intimacy. There's no fear or rejection in Krishna consciousness. Krishna never rejects his disciple, never rejects his devotee. You can never ever think, if I place my love and protection with Krishna, is he going to reject me? You know, like in the material world where all these, we're talking about these songs, 99.9% of all songs, you know, pop songs are, will he leave me, will he stay with me, does he love me, he doesn't love me. So this is the material world, but Krishna never leaves you. You know, Krishna never leaves you. Krishna will always be there for you. Similarly, the devotees should develop that consciousness as well. Now, when you a devotee is not disconnected or an isolationist. A devotee never just gets into a little pocket and stays by themselves. Devotee is always giving to one another, relating with other devotees. Now, when you have the situation of a Mayavadi, as Prabhupada mentioned in the purport of that Bhagavad Gita, they tend to be selfish, an isolationist, a nice person that just stays by themselves. I'm doing my own thing, Prabhu, I'm just here, you know, don't bother me. There's a level of selfishness. The Mayavadi also have this selfishness, that they are only concerned about themselves, because in fact they believe that all is one, you know, all is me, and I'm God. And so nobody else really matters, because you all guys, you all don't exist. Because whatever you are out there, you'll actually merge with me anyway, and we're all God. So this is the impersonalist understanding. The devotees actually, in fact, go out of their way to establish deep friendships. And this is incumbent upon a devotee. They have to go out of their way to establish deep friendships. And there's no greater friendships in this material world than that between devotees. It's a wonderful thing. And it's actually an interesting point that when one develops a relationist attitude, dealing with seeing people as friends, dealing with different relationships, being intimate with relationships, it actually is better for your health. It's now scientifically research that if a person is an outgoing, friendly type of person, instead of somebody that harbours just internal sort of ideas and stays by themselves and is pretty locked into their own little situation, that personality is not as healthy as one who has intimate friendships and relationships.
Introverted.
Huh?
Introverted.
So they also live longer. A person that has established good friendships and relationships lives longer. There's a quote here in some research: a person's ability to love and connect with others lays the foundation for both psychological and physical health. So one of the things that, and we can take an example from Krishna. Krishna is never alone. Prabhupada made a point that we should never ever paint a picture of Krishna by himself, because Krishna is never alone. Krishna is always with his friends. You know, he has friends everywhere. And he wants us to have a relationship with him. So Krishna is a wonderful person, you know, in that he has cowherd boyfriends, cowherd girlfriends. He has his friends with the cows, with the animals, with the monkeys. He's friends with everyone. So this friendly attitude must be seen within our community as well, because the general community is looking for friendship everywhere. That's the thing. Now, what we're now developing in Krishna consciousness, as opposed to what was being developed in the 70s and 80s and the 90s, in this new millennium, what we're now developing is community. Community. People are looking towards the Krishna consciousness movement as a way of life that we can live in the community. And a community thrives on relationships. Whatever a devotee does individually, or whatever the devotees do collectively, is being watched by the broader world. There's no two ways about that. People watch us. They look at us and ask, are they the solution to my anxiety? So we have to really nurture that. Just interesting, when we were doing that program the other day, the cooking course here, we had 130 odd people that had never come to the temple before. The majority had never come to this temple before, and they were all local residents and people from this community. They were looking at us like, you know, so analytically. And they look, what's the relationship like between devotees? When the boys were serving out the prasad, I saw a little video that Bhakti Russell Sarum had made, and they were just, you know, like watching every step. So it's incumbent upon the devotees to actually be really, really conscious that we are setting an example for the world. And we have to develop this friendship. We have to see things in good relationships, inspired relationships. Just as Krishna always says that, you know, there are many, many rules in Krishna consciousness, but there's fundamentally one basic rule. Always think of Krishna and never forget Krishna. That's the sum and substance of Krishna consciousness. So in two ways we can take that. Always think of Krishna, never forget Krishna. We can directly have a link with Krishna, build a relationship with Krishna through our prayer, through our meditation, through japa, through worship, and through reading about his pastimes. That's developing a relationship, an intimate relationship with Krishna himself. But also, it's incumbent upon us to also see Krishna within other living entities. That Krishna is so compassionate, he's within the heart of all living entities, and that we have to develop a friendship also and a relationship with Krishna that way. So the scriptures also tell us that there are three ways in which we deal with other devotees. Three ways that we all deal with other devotees. The first way is that we have our superiors in devotional service. Elders, our guru, either shiksha or diksha gurus, they are our superiors. So in that light, and people that are giving you instruction, people that are your managers, whatever, in that light we should be really careful that our relationship with those people are of reverence and respect and service. That we really maintain a good level. That it's not that we can just take it for granted. If you, in today's society, I mean, the way people are, the parents, say for example, or the police or anyone in authority is taken, is really, the standards are just dropping like you wouldn't believe. The police are regarded as just, you know, insignificant people, whereas they're the administrators of the law. And nowadays that's just taken for granted. So again, the general community, the basic whole of community is looking towards people that are still respectful in ways. And the devotees should always maintain that. So we have to have respect for our superiors, for people in authority. That's important. And then the next one, which is probably one of the most important, is how we develop relationships with our peers, with our brothers and sisters, our God brothers and sisters within devotional service. This is of the utmost importance in that we have to confide with one another. We have to open our hearts to one another. We have to actually, if you have a problem in Krishna consciousness, if there's something really bugging you, you have to find a God brother or sister who you can talk to about it. And open your mind and allow that person to give some commentary and help you. Because again, we need help from our brothers and sisters in Krishna consciousness. And we have to be friends with them, we have to open our minds to them, and also serve them. It's all a question of selfless service. You know, whether it's to a superior, whether it's to our peers, again, it's recognizing Krishna within the heart and doing service for our friends. The last one is our juniors, and that is to give guidance and example. So, if someone is coming to Krishna consciousness, it is our duty to give guidance and, again, friendship and direction. Now that also means to people that are in the broader community. We have to give guidance, shelter, love, relationships. This is so important. If we're in a situation, we have to be in a sense parent-like. when we're doing preaching, and this was also drummed into us when we were doing book distribution in the early days, that we actually have to go out to the community and instead of having this consciousness, I have to make sales, I have to sell so many books, or I have to collect so much. In our time, it was also doing paraphernalia sales. It wasn't so much, let me sell something. It was more a question of, let me befriend somebody. And when you apply that friendship principle, it's so easy to actually sell a book, or sell a paraphernalia, or encourage a person to come to Crossways of Gopals. Because the general populace is looking for genuine friendship, genuine relationships, and the devotees can offer that. So when you're in a situation of superior to a junior, it's important that we don't take advantage of that situation, that we don't bully or coerce people. This is a very important thing, because when you have a situation like in Krishna consciousness, these structures, this supreme knowledge coming through, and people are absolutely so willing to learn this knowledge because it is the panacea that's saving them from this cycle of birth and death, and soul within the body realizes they've got the truth, I've got to go for that. If then they are in a situation in relationships where they're being abused or bullied, this is the worst thing, because the person is coming to Krishna consciousness, they're wanting to surrender to the Lord, they're wanting to give their heart to the Lord, they're wanting to have this knowledge fill their heart. There's no other place where they can go. But then the person that is directly supervising them is in a sense bullying that person. That's very, very wrong, because you're stopping that person from progressing. So we have to check that in ourselves. If you see that, then you have to talk to other devotees about that. I have a tendency, Prabhu, to lord it over somebody when I'm in a position of power in devotional service. This is very, very dangerous, because it could destroy that person's spiritual life. It, just by our relationship, just by our dealing with this other personality, we could destroy that person's spiritual life for many, many lifetimes. I've seen it personally in Krishna consciousness. It's a learning process, so we've learned that, you know, someone comes in a position of power, whether it's temple manager or Sankirtan leader, and because we're all conditioned souls, we sometimes abuse our power. And then a person leaves Krishna consciousness. And that's sad. That should be the saddest thing to us as a devotee, that we're losing someone, that they're not getting an opportunity to fulfill their desire to go back home, back to Godhead. So in every way, it's a point of developing friendship. And in that last part, we have to also see it's a question of service. In all those areas, whether one is in the, giving service to the superior devotee, whether one is giving service to our friends, our peers, or giving to the junior devotees, it is a question of giving friendship, developing relationships, being honestly open to the other person, honestly coming to the point of, you're my friend. I don't want to harm you. I'm not going to abuse you. I just want to be your friend. You know, and together, your friendship will help me. Some people think, well, you know, if I'm a junior, if I'm in a superior position, I don't need that junior position person's relationship, because I'm on this platform of superior, I've got, you know, experience. I don't need someone younger to me than me to be my friend. I only need my peers and my superiors. Wrong attitude. Because you need them as much as they need you. Because it's by developing this loving relationship, this parental-like relationship, that you develop qualities of guru. You develop qualities of guru. Being a parent, in a sense, is like you're a guru as a parent. You're raising your children. So, and a parent constantly gives. Constantly gives. And the joy of watching a person fructify, grow, is a great experience. And it validates the whole things that you've been learning. All the all this Krishna consciousness that you've been learning, when you see it manifest in someone else and they grow, it's a fulfilling thing for you that you need to see. So in every way, it's very, very important. Spiritual maturity is like physical fitness. It's like physical fitness, you know, it's like a workout in the gym. It's not something that happens once and you attain a level of fitness and then you stay at that level of fitness. You know about fitness. It's not like you can just, you know, okay, I've built my six pack and I've got my muscles and everything and I don't have to do anything anymore. No. You have to constantly pursue fitness. You constantly have to check it. You constantly have to develop it. And intimacy in our relationship with devotees is of the utmost importance and it requires regular relational deposits. It's a really interesting term that I came across. It requires regular relational deposits. That means you have to put in. It's so easy to sometimes just blot out and just be in your own little world. But it is important to make the effort to see how your God brothers are doing, to see how you can serve a senior devotee, to see how you can help a younger devotee, and take the time out to actually do that. You'll benefit from it and they'll benefit from it. And that will develop maturity in Krishna consciousness. It's an exercise that we have to do. And an exercise, sometimes we're all reluctant to do exercise. You know? It's the thing that you sort of think, yeah, I'll do it tomorrow. But we have to do it. We have to develop our relationships with one another on a daily basis. What can I do for you, Prabhu? How are you today? You got any problems? Can I help you in any way? When you do that, one of the greatest examples that I personally have seen in Krishna consciousness was Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was the epitome of this quality that I'm talking about, friendship. Really opening to devotees. He had no problem. He had friends everywhere, in every walk of life. You know, whether it was in an African village, dealing with politicians in Washington, dealing with the GBC, or dealing with the pot washer down doing the pots. He was on the same. He felt it was so important, this development of relationships. You know, and this is what we have to develop. It was really interesting. One time he was here and something had to be done. Oh, some sweeping upstairs. You know how we got the rooms for the sannyasis upstairs? And somehow or other, somebody came in and said, oh, the sweeping hasn't been done. He was the first one to say, can I do that? Now, he was guru. He was a guru coming here to Melbourne. And it wasn't like he was putting it on. I was in his room at the time I was talking to him. And it was not like he was doing a show. He genuinely felt, oh, I'll do that. I'll clean that up after I finish with Bhakti, you know. And I thought, my God, you know, this is guru. He's just, and this is the way he was. Like even at Gita Nagari, I heard that, you know, he would go in the fields and plough with the devotees and pick weeds. And this is what's incumbent. And people watch that. The world, the broader world, watch that. We are the example to the world. But like it or lump it, we are the ones that hold the knowledge. They are so attracted to people like the Dalai Lama, as I just told you. He hasn't got a clue. Oh, it's bad luck. Karma doesn't. It's all bad luck. He hasn't got a clue. But we, by the mercy of Prabhupada and the Vedas and the Shastras and our Guru Maharaj, have got the answer. And so we have to go out and do this. But it's done in the point of relationships and friendship. It is absolutely imperative upon that. So I'll just read the translation again. Just as one may imitate persons whom one sees dancing and singing, similarly the soul, although never the doer of material activities, becomes captivated by material intelligence and is thus forced to imitate its qualities. Any comments or questions at all, Prabhu? Yes, Prabhu?
There's a lot of recorders and literature. We've talked about Christianity has warped and distorted the incarnation philosophy. It's gone there, they just need to read the book. And even in the Bible, when they talk about it, it's a big deal. Somebody had come here, he had died, Elijah had died,
Yeah, generally, if you have interfaith work, yeah, it's handy to have that information, basic information. And again, you know, if you haven't got the information, just ask other devotees and they'll give that information. But more and more, as we're coming into the 21st century, it is going to be incumbent upon devotees to actually be in the community. There's no two ways about that. We have to start making our connection with the broader community. We form our own community, and we can see that happening with all the different Namhata groups, and it's just expanding in leaps and bounds, and that's wonderful. But we're in touch with the broader community. So when we're dealing with the broader community, it's not a question that we have a sort of point of view, well, we know everything, you guys don't. It's a question more of, how can I help you in your search for truth? We're facilitators, you know, we're helping them. We're not out to convert people, we're out to help people. Any other comments or questions at all, Prabhu? Yes, Prabhu? Yep. Can I? David?
Yeah, that comment about reincarnation in the Bible, I think it's in Matthew 11, since Elijah became John the Baptist.
There's a couple of other ones also, but I'll get them out sometime. Jai? David?
Oh, with the thing about leadership, what's the meaning of the leader? Do they have to show the way, basically?
Yeah, by example.
They
take responsibility to guide and direct people that are their subordinates. Yeah. And you do that by, you know, setting the proper example. When
you're
you read,
the first one to do it, basically. You're the first one to do it.
Not necessarily, but you show the way on how to do it. Like, say, for example, if you read Mahabharata, Yudhisthira Maharaj was the leader, you know, and you know, he was just exemplary in every way, and the other Pandavas just fell in line because he was the leader, and he was just unshakable in his principles. So as a leader, and we're all leaders in society, believe it or not, you guys are the leaders of society. You have to be exemplary, and you have to show the way with clear direction and give the panacea of Krishna consciousness to the broader community and those who want to take it up. We have to recognize who we are, you know, when we come to this Krishna consciousness. We are leaders of a community, of society. There's no doubt about it. It dawned on me so clearly when I started doing this interfaith work. They automatically take you as a leader figure because you have the knowledge. And you have the knowledge is one thing, but you exude the knowledge because the knowledge is one of relationship. You're open to all people. Very, very important. Joe, did you have a question?
When we hear about relationship and bullying, you mentioned, so tendency of mind is if we bring up things that you faced injustice, but it won't bring up that how injustice you were to others.
No, explain it a little bit.
Mind will easily bring up things that you experience injustice from other people.
Yep.
But it is very difficult for mind, or it won't bring basically, that you were also injusticeful to others.
Right.
It's a trick of mind.
It's a trick of mind, yeah.
How to overcome.
Speak to your God brothers. Speak to your friends. This is the whole point of what I'm saying. When you have a problem like that, you either go to a superior in friendship and ask for their advice. And how do you deal with that when that comes up in your life? Or you talk to your peers, your brothers, your close friends. This is what's happening to me. How do I deal with that? I feel an injustice happening to me. What do I do about that? You know, how do I cope with that? So that's important. So this is the whole thing of communicating, relating. A lot of people, you know, when they feel something like that happening, they jam up, they hold it inside, you know. I'm not going to talk to anybody about that. I've been hard done by. I really feel not happy about this, you know. and then they become morose and they hold it in and they feel anxiety and it bottles up and it causes sickness. You're better off if you have something that's bottling up, don't hold it inside. Go and talk to someone you trust. And this is again this point of developing close, intimate relationships. Go to somebody you trust, somebody that you love, and talk to them about it. Talk to them about it. You know, your friend, your close friend. It won't happen. You have to work at making friends with people, you know, and then the other person will help you. And it's actually understood that when in the brahmachari and brahmacharini ashram we develop close friendships like that, intimate friendships with our god brothers and god sisters, that you could say anything to your close friend and they'll help you. That then establishes a good marital relationship in the future, if that's the direction you want to go. Because again, so many times it happens in marriages where there's no real intimacy. And I'm not talking on a sexual level, I'm talking on an intimate relationship level where you can open your heart to your partner and that your partner is able to help you and you help your partner like that. So that training comes in the Brahmacharini ashram and the Brahmachari ashram, where you actually develop that close relationship, that if problems come up, I can go to my friend and I can express how I feel and they'll help me. They'll advise me. Because sometimes, and that's again because of this material mind and intelligence, it becomes cloudy for us. We become clouded in our perception of how to deal with the situation. And so you need an outside source to come in and clear the clouds away. Oh, Prabhu, it's not that bad. Or Prabhu, I'll go and talk to them and see what happens, you know. It's very, very important. Does that make sense, Jai?
This is easier for it actually to understand. My question was a little bit different. I also might have hurt someone, but mine won't accept him that I have done injustice to others. That was my question.
Yeah, you just have to be easy on yourself as well, and work, you know, as best you can on that point. I have to talk to you later about exactly what you mean by that. That's very deep, that one. That you feel you've done an injustice to someone else? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and in such situation might happen. The mind will accept. No, mind will,
that you have done an injustice.
Okay,
so it's an ego thing.
Yeah, ego
thing. It's like, you can't do that to me, I'm right. Again, take the humble position. You have to develop a humble position. And again, seek advice. You know? It's to squash the ego, to squash this I'm right attitude is the thing that we're going to be battling with for a long time, you know? But just taking a humble attitude, you know, submissive attitude, will right it eventually, you know? I'll talk to you later about it. If that's okay?
Yeah. All right. What do you do in a situation where someone tells you something you can't do? They should really be your line manager. And if you take that particular line manager, then you have no motive to pay. And okay, then you look at the person who's going to help that person. Sometimes it's backfired when you make the line manager will say, but you knew about it, you never told me, you're not cooperative. You are an animal in your life. How do you handle such a crazy situation?
It's difficult. Yeah, it's difficult. But again, it's a question of consulting, being honest, being open. And this is the point. I mean, it's a question of just developing more and more intimate relationships, really opening up, you know. And understanding also the scriptures, you know, understanding that we are spirit souls and we're trapped here in this. It is a material world after all, and you know, but this confiding with other people is a source of strength in one sense. You may not be able to rectify the situation, but just that you get it off your chest sometimes is enough. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's good enough that okay, the situation may not be solved, but just that I've talked to somebody else about it, you're not harbouring it, you're not holding it within, you've let it out. And so consequently, you know, it's not something that you're in isolation with. You've let it out. You've let other people share your thoughts. Mm-hmm. Any other comments or questions? Yes, Ruben?
That's probably more in terms of, I don't know if it's a comment or a question or something, but in terms of like showing the example, just on Saturday there was two customers that just put those Harinam persons up their crosswords as well, and they said that they'll ask them, are we allowed to join in the dancing? And it's like, yeah, sure, no worries. But the thing is, like, so hard to get a good number of devotees to come on the Hari. So if they were to come and there's not many that are there, would it be discouraging for them? Or would, because usually it's the most enthusiastic that come, so sometimes the enthusiasm just overcomes it. Sometimes if it's a big number, the enthusiasm is already there.
Yeah, I know. It's hard to drum up that enthusiasm when it's a small. But we used to do Harinam and there'd be two people. After Crossways we used to do Harinam and it'd be two people doing me and somebody else, and there'd be these two Haris running down the street singing their heads off, you know. But yeah, and it's nice if you could get a big crew to help you and that impetus. But if somebody else joins in, yeah, take them on board. It's all how you position yourself, you know. And if you think, well, we're the only one, so let's go for it, you know. It's pretty, but obviously it's nice when you have a big, but you should try and encourage your friends to come out. Don't lord it over them, but just say, hey, listen, you're missing out on some real ecstasy. Or you ask, hey, listen, I really need you to come and help me. You got any service? No, I haven't, but would you mind just coming with me and we do Harinam together? Because, you know, it's just me and somebody else, and I'd really love it if you could come as well. Yeah, okay, I'm your friend, I'll come. Like that. And if you are his friend, they'll come. So it's again a question of friendship. But yeah, I know the feeling. I know the feeling. Prabhu, do you have a question?
Yeah, a comment about restriction. You were talking about restriction. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, asat sankhya e vaishnava.
Absolutely. You have a look at Lord Chaitanya's life. It was all to do with friendship. You know, the intimate associations that he had with his disciples, you know, with the people in Puri, you know, Srinivasacharya's house, you know, and you close all the doors, folks. We, you know, this is like intense relationship building here, you know, big kirtan, just, you know,
sadhu,
one moment association. But we want to give more than a moment, you know. So, did you have something, Annie?
Yeah, okay. In terms of good association, bad association, but often comes up in class, I was thinking that the concept itself can be a little bit dangerous if taken.
Very true.
The right way.
Good question.
We're thinking that associating with good association, and thinking all the time, if that's a very good association, you can be quite detrimental and miss out on the good part of potential.
That's a very good point. And also people will say, well, I won't go out there because it's bad association with the non-devotees. But you have to understand and have faith in Krishna also, you know, that we go out there to not associate with people, we go out there to give association to people.
Yeah.
So that's that whole point of giving association. So even somebody may not be really the most pukka devotee, you know, maybe somebody that is a part-time devotee, you know, they have an associate devotee, and so they may not be the best association for you to be with if you took their association, but you can give your association to them to then develop more Krishna consciousness in them. There's one person, when we first came to Krishna consciousness, Bhagavata Shraya, who used to be a temple here. And he used to come to our house. Now, we were just on the verge of becoming devotees, but we're still, you know, still a bit out there, so to speak. But he would come as a friend, right, to give his association. And it was that, one of those one of those connections that won us over to become devotees because of his friendship. He would come and he would drink a cup of Milo with us, and he would, you know, he would give us association, and he would talk about anything, and then he'd say, why don't we just read a little bit from Chaitanya Charitamrita? Who'd be into that? Yeah, okay. So we sat and we read Chaitanya Charitamrita with him. And then he said, tomorrow I've got to go to the markets. I haven't got anybody to go with me. Would one of you people like to come? Yeah, I'll come with you, because we liked him. He was our friend. And so when we went to the market, he then spoke about Krishna consciousness, and he was giving association all the time, to the extent that it was basically him that brought a whole household, 8 people, in one hit to Krishna consciousness. Just by friendship. Just by being friendly. And then later, he was going through some difficulties, and it was my job then to give association to him as a friend and lift him up again. So what he had developed eventually helped him to again be Krishna conscious. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah.
So this is really, really important. It's not that we just put in and you think, oh, you know, how am I ever going to get a return from this? It's not that we think that way. But just by being friendly, you'd be surprised who's going to be the one to save you when material energy, when material intelligence, when your material mind has covered you to such an extent where you're actually contemplating leaving Krishna consciousness, that they actually come and say, hey, you're my friend, why don't you come back? I miss you, you know? Oh, okay, I'll come back to Krishna consciousness. Does that make it? Is that clear?
Yeah.
Okay. So good and bad association, it's all a question of whether you're going to take their association or give association.
Is there a limit,
the
rightness?
You have to have internal strength, yeah. And that is good sadhana, and following the principles and chanting good rounds and yeah. Sorry? Maturity has to be there, yeah. But even yesterday, you know, like Ganapati was mentioning, some friends came, some friends from the past, right? And he couldn't spend enough. And he couldn't spend enough time with them because of some other reason, and he felt a little bit flat because he didn't have that opportunity to spend time with them. It's important that we don't neglect our friends also. When they actually are making an approach to Krishna consciousness because of friendship that we've established outside of Krishna consciousness, we don't turn our back on that. If they reject your friendship or if they reject your Krishna consciousness, then you offer your respects from a distance and leave it at that. But if there's an inkling of desire that they want to know more, then you fan it like anything. And Krishna will protect you. Prabhupada was so emphatic that we go out and preach. You know, people would say to him, yeah, but Prabhupada, I'm not really qualified. And he'd say, what? He said, and then he would, you know, like especially young Bhaktin would come to Krishna consciousness, oh, Prabhupada, I can't preach. He'd say, what? He said, who is Krishna? Who is God? And she said, Krishna. What's your relationship? Oh, I'm servant of Krishna. Go out and preach. That's it. You know? This is it. We can preach from whatever level. You preach from the level of your realization. And if there's something you don't know, then you say, well, listen, I have a friend, and she's a really nice devotee, and I get a lot of solace from her. I'll put her in touch with you. And she can tell you and answer those questions. And you haven't destroyed your friendship, and it's developed. We have to stop here for this. It's 8:45. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.